I call this meeting to order, the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors for September 9th, 2014, Admission Day for California. Please rise for a salute to our flag and remain standing for County Employee Kern Fay from the Alliance Network.
I pledge allegiance to the flag and the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. We'll begin today's meeting with a presentation from Adopt-A-Pet, Stanislaus Animal Services Agency. Stanislaus Animal Services Agency has many dogs and cats available for adoption. All the animals available for adoption at the shelter are spayed or neutered and have age-appropriate vaccinations and have a microchip. Last month, we featured two pets, a cat named Wilbur, who was adopted on September 5th, and a dog named Sue, who was rescued on September 2nd. Today, we have two pets available for adoption. We will begin with our cat. Our featured cat today is Scarlet. She is a legal calico short-haired cat. She is approximately 2 years old, spayed and microchipped. She is affectionate and would love to keep you on your lap warm during the fall. She has been with the Animal Services Agency since August 12th. And she's a beautiful cat, and she is available for adoption today. And we have our featured dog, Ducky. I don't know who gave the dog a name like Ducky, but she is a black Chihuahua mix. She is approximately 4 months old and is neutered and microchipped. She is playful and fun-loving pup, ready to be a part of any family. She has been with Stanislaus Animal Services Agency since August 14th. Both animals are available today for adoption at the Stanislaus Animal Shelter Agency. Please remember that adopting a new member to your family is a big commitment and that the shelter staff is there to help you meet your new best friend. To adopt either of these animals or other animals that are available, please visit the shelter at 3647 Cornucopia Way in Modesto or call the animal shelter at 558-7387. Adoptable animals can be viewed at the website at www.stanislausanimalservices.com. Okay, now is the time in our meeting for public comment for those in the audience who would like to address this board on a non-agenda item. If you would like to speak on an agenda item, you have to wait till that item comes up. I have two speaker cards today for people who want to speak. First is Deborah Harper.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper. I am still continuing to try to attempt to coordinate in Stanislaus County. Those of you who know the complications find it entertaining, respectfully. Okay, on the lighter side, how many of you on the board are perfect? Is anybody here perfect, a perfect human being? How many of you agree with everything your coworkers, colleagues say every day? Thank you. Yet you can present yourselves in a professional manner most of the time and treat each other with respect every day. You come to work, you disagree, you be respectful. But a citizen of the Stanislaus County, U.S. of A., any Stanislaus County, cannot do the same. I took two photographs this morning of human beings that are homeless and very mentally challenged. I've seen them year after year after year. I couldn't get them, but it's waited in time to show you that these individuals, they have not received the mental health care that they need. They still walk the streets going through the garbage cans. There's no improvement level. Just out of curiosity, what years are your vehicles? Are they recent? You've upgraded your automobiles over the years, but yet we can't talk about upgrades within the county. It's a very fine line. We want to present a perfect image. We want to be happy. We want to be pleasant all the time and present the best image. At the same time, there are upgrades that need to be made. Challenges to be met. How can we do that without slamming another human being down to the homeless, digging through the garbage can level? I have managed to improve my situation a little bit, but I'm unable to find a home because, for instance, Stanislaus County has accused me of false petty accusations over the years, and increased that false accusation to serious false accusations throughout the years in public libraries. So much so that when I go to the Thomas, they don't even know my name, but they say, oh, you've been suspended somewhere else. You are suspended for 6 months. The language is for abusive language. I don't abuse language. Somebody made a false accusation. I peacefully and respectfully took that false accusation to their manager. Instead of managing the problem, they accused me of of abusive language. How do you say, how do you communicate to somebody in this county or anywhere else when they're saying false information? How can you clarify the correct information? Okay? There was no effort made here to make any corrections for a lot of years. I presented accurate information, I documented accurate information. Respectfully, Mr. Reiser told me that he was going to back the library employees up, one of which called me annoying. Okay? She called me annoying to provoke a fight when she called the sheriff's deputy on me because I'm in Solana County. Well, Mr. Tom Martin is in your agenda today, who is involved in my health care and the lack of health care and the false information in that. So it kind of came together all of a sudden this morning. So my prayer is, can we start talking about the upgrades in the county? Respectfully, I do hear. I back up when I went into Mr. Ryder in the hall because he was immediately aggressive and wasn't doing protocol. And I tried to maintain protocol, but I will step out of the elevator. Nothing personal. You know, we have to respect each other. But I'm going to demand when you show up because this is very serious. I applied for social security disability because of the false information that led to false mental labels, and I've been called every mental label in the book, which is why I wanted to show you the pictures today. I've been called every mental label in the book. They gave me a fraudulent mental social security diagnosis just because of the mental labels and the ER records that I had to show, the records that I showed, and because everyone neglected to clear. Thank you. The clear abnormalities in the x-rays. Okay, everybody neglected the clear abnormalities in the x-rays. You're talking about life now. This is very serious. You are minimizing and shortening somebody's lifespan.
Your time is up.
Thank you very much. So I pray that we can start talking about upgrades and not make it a serious legal issue very soon. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for your comments. Susan Beasley.
Good morning. I am here to invite you, as I come once a year, to invite you to special activities happening in our community. And the first one is actually kicking off this Saturday. It's the Modesto's Architecture Festival. It kicks off Saturday at the County Library with a family architecture event. So this is a great opportunity to learn about science, engineering, math, for all ages. We are going to be building structures out of cardboard tubes, newspapers, and magazines. Now, how does that strike you? Lots of fun. Lots of fun. Smiles. Come on. Come on. It'll get your inner child out there rolling with tape, and you can make all kinds of wonderful structures. You may think, well, what does that do? But think about it from a child's point of view. When we make technology, science, and math fun, children will engage and learn, and that's how they're going to help them do better in school. So if you imagine the structure, all magazine rolls, how high can you get it before it's going to topple over? So that is what I invite you to come find out on Saturday. And that, of course, kicks off Architecture Week, the Modesto International Architecture Festival. It's a week-long celebration with film and all kinds of activity. There is a flyer at your seats. The second activity is Modesto's International Festival, the 22nd annual, another free family event. And this one is teaching us about the world, geography, history, social science. So that when I give you a map of the United States, all of you should be able to immediately name all 50 states, correct? And you should all be able to pass the very wonderful fifth grade level civics quiz that we give the children. Yes? Yeah, okay. Again, I invite you on Saturday, October 5, to test yourselves 11 to 5 at MJC East Campus, a day-long event of international food, music, and dance, and of course we never ever forget to celebrate our American heritage, which is what brings us all together. We have an opening ceremony at 11 a.m. sharp with Modesto's Poet Laureate, Jillian Wegener. We have a soloist, Angela Hermosillo, from Yes Company, who's going to lead us in the national anthem, and of course the wonderful parade of flags in the morning. So come join us all day long, 11 to 5 on Saturday, October 5, at MJC East Campus, and we hope to see you this Saturday for the family architecture event that kicks off that whole week-long celebration. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are the only two speaker cards that have been turned in to me. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to address this board on a non-agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we will go to the consent calendar. Any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar?
Mr. Chairman, item B6, please.
B as in boy?
Yes.
Okay, does anybody else like to pull an item from consent? Anybody from the audience wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar except for item B6.
I'll make a motion to approve all items except B6 on the consent calendar.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion from Nate and seconded. We approve the consent calendar except for item B6. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried. We will now go to item B6.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just 2 weeks ago, this board approved in a 5-0 vote to approve this loan program for dry wells. And without any communication or anything else other than a consent item, it's been brought back to modify what we just approved 2 weeks ago and take away the committee structure that would approve these loans. While I have full confidence in the Auditor Controller, I just don't see the need of why we need to change what this board approved. You know, again, on unanimous vote, it's bringing forth that something to change what we've already directed what needs to happen. We've directed it. Let's follow through with it. And then I also have concerns of why we haven't gotten this loan program off the ground. And I would like to make the motion to deny this agenda item, but also put on there a 48-hour window to get this loan application on our website and get the program going.
Okay, I noticed that there was a change in there with the auditor controller. Would you like to modify this item?
I'd just like to leave it the way it was that we approved 2 weeks ago.
We had a meeting about this last Wednesday, Bill. Maybe let Keith talk a little bit about why we came to this, how we got to this point.
Sure. Keith Boggs, Assistant Executive Officer, Board Chairman, members, Mr. Rise and Mr. Doring. In the item that came to you 2 weeks ago, there was not a recommendation to establish that committee. And that was brought to my attention after the item came to you. In preparation to bring that what we thought was a very simple cleanup item back to you this morning, recommending the committee that I spoke around during the presentation, but wasn't one of the recommendations. It was also brought to our attention that a committee structure, and Mr. Dolan can clarify if I go off campus here, a committee structure requires a Brown Act requirement. And with the Brown Act comes full disclosure, and there was some significant concern that with that Brown Act cover and that disclosure, that it may deter applicants from applying it having their financial records in full public forum. So the resolve to that wasn't to move the committee structure. We still have an ad hoc committee that will review, but the request this morning is to have a officer, committee officer, as the final say, and that would allow that protection for applicants making application and their financial records to remain out of the Brown Act umbrella. Is that a close enough paraphrase, Jeff?
Okay, that's what the staff report says. Staff report says we need to do this for timing issue. That's what the staff report says. I don't know. I mean, there's just been zero communication back to the board on this issue that there was even a problem. And to have a vote on consent like this, I just don't agree.
So, sorry, but maybe that was my fault. We met last Wednesday, I guess, is when we met. And in that meeting is when we realized that this could turn out to keep people from wanting to apply because everything was going to have to be Brown Act, you know, part of the Brown Act, and it all have to be out there, and their whole life, like you're applying for a loan, would have to be public information. And so we kind of came to that. So maybe we should have, you're right, the agenda item should have been different, and I'll take the blame for that. We should have probably made that clearer. So
we had every intention, Supervisor O'Brien, for this being on the website by Friday afternoon.
I might mention the devil's always in the detail here, and as we got into, really dug into the weeds on how this was going to be involved, to even the tracking of the loan payments and the processing of the loan payments, we have been in discussions and negotiations with the housing authority who does this on a regular basis, perhaps contract with them to actually handle the entire administration of the program once the loan's approved. And so that's been a little bit of the delay, trying to figure out the most appropriate and efficient mechanism for processing what's kind of a new arena for us from a county staff perspective.
Okay, but we have the requirements kind of in place. We need to get the ball rolling. We need
Absolutely.
To get this out to the people who are suffering. I mean, two more weeks have gone by. Just imagine your life without water for 2 weeks.
How much longer is it going to take to get this?
We have the application, we believe, in final form. We have an agreement, we believe, that is in near final form. We have a meeting with the Housing Authority this morning at 11, and we're confident that we're in the home stretch to get this, like I said, on the website and available to the public by Friday afternoon this week.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Okay, let's pleasure the board.
I'm going to make a motion to approve B6.
Okay, is there a second? Supervisor Monteith, did you second that?
Yeah.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. We approve this item. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Okay, motion carried 3-1. Okay, we will now move to our scheduled matter at 9:05, to a public hearing to provide comment for to consider the approval of the citizen participation for HUD grants.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, Mr. Rising, Mr. Doring, and Davis County Planning Director. We're here this morning to present for the citizen participation plan for the HUD grants administered by the Planning and Community Development Department. Stanislaus County serves as the lead administrator for the Stanislaus Urban County, which is comprised of Stanislaus County and the cities of Ceres, Houston, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford.
Annually, the Urban County receives approximately $2 million in HUD grants. The 30-day public comment period for the plan was opened by the Board of Supervisors on August 26th. The item this morning is to close the public comment period and request approval of the plan. With me this morning to present the plan is Juan Gonzalez, and also with us this morning is Kristen Dowd. At this time, I'll turn over the presentation to Juan.
Good morning, Chairman Dimentini, members of the board, CEO Risen, Mr. Doring. Before you this morning is the Staten Island Suburban County Citizen Participation Plan for HUD programs. As a condition of the use of HUD grants, the county is required to conduct a consolidated planning process that involves the preparation of a consolidated plan, an annual action plan, a performance report, and analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. The comp plan serves as a comprehensive strategy to address the needs of low and moderate income residents, to encourage and achieve community-wide dialogue. Federal rules require that citizens be given the opportunity to serve and comment on the planning process. Therefore, as lead agency, the county must adopt a citizen participation plan that encourages citizen participation, in particular low-income residents in low-income neighborhoods. HUD requires that the plan provide a reasonable access to meetings and information related to the use of the funds. It also requires that we outline how citizens will be informed of the amount of assistance to be received, activities to be undertaken, and plans to minimize any displacement via the use of program funds. The plan must also provide public hearings to obtain citizen views and respond to questions, allow consultation with agencies serving low and moderate income residents, and consider written or oral comments during the development process. The proposed citizen participation plan and the process currently implemented complies with all these requirements. Traditionally, the county's participation plan has been outlined within the consolidated plan. However, during a recent technical assistance visit, it was recommended that the county create a standalone policy document to be in full compliance with HUD requirements. Until now, HUD has not raised any concerns, but we have proactively developed this proposed plan to avoid any issues in the future. Within the citizen participation plan, HUD requires grantees to establish criteria that will constitute a substantial amendment to the comp plan or action plan. A substantial amendment will then trigger the citizen participation and public hearing process, and in essence, the criteria is up to the locality's discretion. In compliance with this requirement, Section 2 of the proposed plan defines the criteria for substantial amendments. So the proposed definition for a substantial amendment to the comp plan is the addition or deletion of consolidated plan priorities or goals. And with regard to action plans, a substantial amendment would be either one of these three. One, the addition of a new activity not previously identified in the action plan, deletion or cancellation of an activity identified in the action plan not deemed ineligible or infeasible, or the addition of new CDBG public service or ESG award grantees. Aside from substantial amendment changes, we have also identified changes that may be addressed administratively to allow for administrative efficiency. The following criteria has been proposed as changes to be handled administratively, not subject to the substantial amendment process. These are, one, proportional adjustments to the CDBG public service and ESG awards to accommodate actual HUD allocations amounts. At times, we are faced with having to adjust the awards after the board has approved the action plan because of HUD's delay in releasing the actual allocations. So that's why we have this one in here. The second one would be the shift of funds not exceeding $150,000 between approved activities, or the shift of fund of a fund balance from a completed activity to another approved activity. With regard to the shift of funds, the proposal of the $150,000 threshold was derived from staff experience in working with the CDBG program, in particular infrastructure projects, where in the past there has been a need to shift funds during the fiscal year between approved activities due to delays outside of staff control. With regard to the previous slide, the shift of funds would only occur when consistent with approved annual action plans and we reported in the performance evaluation reports. While these administrative changes will not require a public hearing, public outreach and Board of Supervisors approval will still be conducted as required by county practice. With regard to the public comment period, this chart identifies the minimum HUD established comment periods that are incorporated in the proposed participation plan, and all documents except the CAPER require a 30-day comment period. So that concludes our presentation. Staff is available for questions, and as well, these are staff recommendations. Does the board have any questions?
Is any questions to staff before I open the public hearing? Seeing none, of the public, I'll open the public hearing. Any comments from the public regarding this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public hearing and bring it back to the board for action.
Mr. Chairman, I will not support the $150,000 threshold issue that's in here. As the supervisor represents a district that has a continual shift to CDBG funds away from projects in my district to projects in other districts, I do not want to give any more authority to staff.
Okay. Any other comments? It was pleasure of the board. Is there a motion one way or another?
Motion approved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, motions been made and seconded. We approve the three staff recommendations. Any further comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I might add a parenthetical at this point. We neglected to announce at the beginning of the meeting that Supervisor Chiesa is absent from this meeting at a conference with CSAC in Washington, D.C. He's not present for this particular portion of the meeting, but he will join us for a closed session later on, and we'll announce it at that time.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. We approve staff recommendations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion passes 3-1. And we will now go to agenda item B8.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. We're back, and we're pleased today to ask you to take the next step in what is a monumental effort led by your board to improve the community safety. I want to make a couple of thank yous. I appreciate that you give me that opportunity because we are a county that's had 3 lease revenue bond projects with the state of California, and no one else has, and all the people I'm going to recognize and all the people that I'll probably forget, it takes us all to move these forward. I'd like to thank the board for your leadership. These are tough projects to assume, to pursue, and they take a lot of leadership and courage. A particular thank you again to the board's Capital Facilities Committee, Supervisors O'Brien and Montes. You've provided us good direction at the beginning and framework to pursue this opportunity to perhaps make the biggest difference in terms of public safety and changing people's lives who become offenders in our criminal justice system. So thank you to the board and to your committee. And there are many team members behind me. They probably wouldn't stand because I asked them to last time, but I want to recognize their efforts. Sheriff Adam Christensen could not be with us today. Captain Bill Duncan beside me. Mr. Mark Lozier, the engineer of this report and PowerPoint before you. Behind me, Lieutenant Greg Clifton, Lieutenant Jim Jacobs, not with us, but with us in spirit, retired Lieutenant Darrell Long, one of the key authors, along with Lieutenant Greg Clifton, of the concept of a REACT reentry and training facility. Randy Cavanaugh, Chino Kalachia, our project manager on this, Mr. Van Switzer, who's behind me, Mr. Joshua Ewing, Council Joan Cox, Sergeant Steve Traverso, Deputy Brandon Galasso, Jim Quartz, who does our part-time accounting, thanks to your board's approval of that, Mr. Tim Fedorchak, Mr. Rick Rodriguez, and the ladies of Capital Projects, Leticia Lomeli, Teresa Vandeveen, Elsa Bubinick, and Michelle Rando. It takes every one of us to push these projects through together, and sometimes we shake our heads because, as you know, we are well into construction on our 8900 Phase 2 project, and we ask you today to take perhaps one of the biggest steps forward on the REACT Center project. We have four projects. I think you know this better than I do at this point. It amazes me that we do, but this is the biggest push, perhaps in this county's history and its future, to improve and modernize, as Chairman DeMartini likes to say, our public safety facilities. You know the location. We were there recently, just a couple of Friday mornings ago, to break ground. And this REACT Center project, I'm pleased to tell you, is just about, and perhaps even will today, pass the full due diligence by the California State Department of General Services, which is a heavy lift. They look at everything, and we are providing one final title report today and expect that effort to be closed. It is really important to talk about the hopefulness and the project before us because it's different than any we have ever seen and perhaps anything that's ever been designed and built in the state of California. And I'd like to reintroduce you to my colleague and partner, Captain Bill Duncan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. I'd like to digress for just a minute. Most of this team, including myself and Patty Hill Thomas, have been together for the last 8 years working on these projects. We started out with the master plan and the needs assessment. Of course, we had the economic downturn, but in June of 2010, we had a fire at the Honor Farm. That fire led to the ability of the CEO's office to negotiate an incredible agreement with the insurance provider to replace the Honor Farm with a newly designed, custom-built, 192-bed minimum security facility that had two classrooms built inside for classroom space that are being used to the fullest extent today. It was a custom-designed operation. We put in for, after the enactment of AB 109 in October of 2011, we submitted an application for AB 900, and again, we were successful to the point that today we are the only county in the state of California that have moved forward with construction, and we're in the construction phase of our AB 900 projects, which include a custom-designed maximum security facility, a custom-designed medical mental health unit, a custom-designed intake building, and a custom-designed day reporting center. And the reason I bring that up is because today we're going to talk again about another custom-designed facility in our REACT Center. But before I talk about that, I have to talk about the speed bump. When we put in our application for SB 1022, we were initially rejected by the state because we did not meet one of the performance criteria. It was an error by the state, and my partner to my right went up and single-handedly argued in favor of the appeal, and it was reminiscent of Clarence Darrow, Perry Mason, and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because she was successful in us receiving our approval of our SB 1022 project, and here we are today getting ready to move forward with that project. Again, it hasn't been without the team effort of the CEO's office, Capital Projects team, my own team from the Sheriff's Department, the Probation Department, and of course HOK, LDA, HP, and Dewberry, who are our vendors in this project. What is SB 1022? Again, like all the other projects, it's a custom-designed project. It's totally new. Nothing like it has ever been done in the state of California. And our goal is to create what we call 288 transitional beds and program space.
basically inmates will go from a non-traditional detention-only type operation into a fully blown program operation with the goal in mind of programming them and reducing recidivism. We will have a reentry and enhanced alternatives to custody REACT Center building, which will serve as the hub for this project. It will also house the administration. I intend to move the jail alternatives unit from downtown and centralize and located at the Public Safety Center in this building, which will include our alternate work program as well as our electronic monitoring. Also, we'll have space available, interview rooms and classroom space for our partners in Modesto City Schools, Friends Outside, the Literacy Quest, VHRS, and the myriad of volunteers that we have coming in, without which we cannot provide these services and programs. With the enactment of AB 109 in October of 2011, the inmate demographics changed totally in the Sheriff's Department. We went from a short-term transient population of inmates that served their sentences in terms of days and weeks to a longer-term inmate with long sentences, inmates who were more criminally sophisticated, used to the prison environment, more gang-oriented, more litigious, and certainly iller from the standpoint of, or burial, I should say, from the standpoint of both physical and mental illness. And so we created this concept of a transitional unit where inmates will be expected to participate in available programs and therapeutic programs. Additionally, part of the master plan and needs assessment recommended closing the downtown men's jail. This project will allow us to replace and close the downtown men's jail and use it only as a daily court holding facility where we move 200 inmates a day to court through that building. The REACT Center project, SB 1022, will include programming space for our partnership and volunteers, as well as our jail alternative staff for AWP program and for the electronic monitoring, and will serve as a link for inmates who require aftercare programming through our daily reporting center. All of the programs will be evidence-based for analysis of outcomes and will change accordingly as needed. Our inmates will receive education, training, and mental and medical health care services with the goal of reducing recidivism. Back to Patty.
Thank you, Captain Duncan. We usually run through the history because the task list is important and we must stay focused on it. On May 6th, you approved the acceptance of the conditional award. On August 13th, the State Public Works Board approved the first 1022 project in the state of California to proceed. That is the Stanislaus County project. This allows us to move forward with your approval today. It's all in the money, it's all in the forms, and this is a picture of the state's approval to proceed. The Board of State and Community Corrections shares our enthusiasm and our pride that there's a 1022 project moving ahead in the state, and I think it's important, again, to recognize your leadership in that to the members of the board. You authorized the project manager to issue an RFQ, request for qualifications and proposals. We hosted 36 different architects, engineers, specialty consultants here for a conference, lots of interest, and we got three great proposals. You might ask, why did it go from 36 to 3? 36 includes the specialty experts, the engineers, as these groups team up. It's not just about the design firm, but it's the design firm and all of their consultants. We got three awesome, outstanding, highly qualified proposals, perhaps the best, in my view, in the nation when it comes to this kind of justice work. And we put them to the test. We had a very extensive, exhaustive, and very creative approach. We prepared the proposals on the comparative competitive qualification basis that we listed in the proposals. We focused particularly on experience, ability to perform, character, integrity, reputation, judgment, and efficiency. Claims experience, which is a bad thing, and these were good firms, and relevant other factors. Clearly, all three firms were qualified to be considered for this project, so we took them again through an extensive interview, problem-solving sessions, and final evaluations. The ranking on this chart shows you that the firm of HOK-LDA, the team of HOK-LDA, and their engineers and specialty consultants was ranked number one. The proposal was the most advantageous to the county in the view of the project team. And I want to point out to you that clearly you know that HOK and LDA are working on our first Public Safety Center expansion, the AB 900 Phase 2 project. But they won this, in our view, hands down, by their creativity, their talent. They brought some new team members, and they brought to us these snapshots, really, of the best practices across the nation about making the change in a custody operation, about providing some level of hopefulness and retraining so that we can break this cycle of recidivism. And I wanted to point that out to you today. Today we ask you to approve the selection award of the professional services agreement. It's for $2.2 million. These funds are reimbursable by the state under the SB 1022 allocation. And with this, we start the clock on the project with the state of California. If I may, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, I'd like to reintroduce you to the project manager from HOK that you have met before. Mr. David Crotty is going to say a few words. Also present in the audience today is Mr. Eric Wolf from LDA. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Patty. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Patty. Thank you to the board, Chairman, and Mr. Durling and Mr. Risen for having me here today. At the beginning, what I'd like to do is maybe just spend a moment to give a little feedback. As Patricia said, HOK LDA team, we are working on projects 1, 2, and 3, the AB 900 projects. And having been worked with many counties in the past and many client groups, I'd like to just take a moment to compliment the team. The capital projects team led by Patricia Hill-Thomas really is an outstanding team. They are very communicative. They're honest and direct. Sometimes we don't hear exactly what we want to hear, but we know that it's the truth, and we work out to a very good solution with that. Thank you for being so direct, Patty. We know that the capital projects team takes the project very personally, and so working with them makes it a lot easier in getting to the best solution. They always strive for excellence, always going for the next thing that we can improve the project on. They display appreciation. They, you know, we're constantly getting feedback, and a lot of times it's very positive feedback, which really, really sits well and creates a very good environment for the entire design team. It allows us to really move the project forward. Also, I'd like to mention the Sheriff's Department, led by Sheriff Christensen and Captain Bill Duncan. They've displayed enormous intelligence in working through the project. They have a clear understanding of complex architectural issues, and are always there to help us with problem solving during the process. So for the entire HOK LDA and design team, we thank you for bringing us forward on this project, and we really look forward to working with you on another successful project. For the REACT project, the energy that we're getting from the county team is palpable. They're very interested in moving forward with an innovative design. And this is something that will really make the project much more special to the entire design team. So what we look at this project is we tend to divide our work up into three general parts. We have, at the beginning, we're going to work on developing a creative design, something extremely innovative, something to work on rehabilitation and reduce recidivism. We need to take that design and we need to document it in a way that's understandable to the construction community, to document it in a way that has the right amount of flexibility to it to take advantage of the design-build process that we're going to be going through, but also to give enough definition so that we keep all of the things that are important to the county in place so that we can move forward with those elements that we determined during the design period. And then thirdly, what we will be doing is we'll be monitoring, confirming, and at times correcting the design build team as they interpret the design that we put forward and they start to actually do construction on the project. Now, we have not had a kickoff meeting yet, but we have started to talk about things that we're going to be doing during this design phase. Part of the essential pieces to this are going to be coming up with a creative and innovative program. It's the whole basis for everything that we do for moving forward. So we create this program that designs exactly what the Sheriff's Department is going to need for the REACT Center, and that allows us to create the architecture behind it. We're looking forward to working at the Public Safety Center site again. We started with the county in working on what we're calling the neighborhood plan and developing a logical complex, a logical campus to the entire PSC, And this REACT Center is going to be an integral part of that. So we're looking forward to helping to complete that vision with the county team. Most importantly, we want to make sure that we have a safe and secure environment for the general public, for the Sheriff's Department, for the inmates. And we want to make sure that we create an environment of healing and of rehabilitation to reduce recidivism. And this is going to be something that we need to work closely and carefully with the outstanding county team. So again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Crowdy. The money is really important here. This is a summary of how this project is funded. It's a $44.6 million project funded by $40 million in state lease revenue financing. Your board set aside the county match 2 fiscal years ago. We have some public facility fees already approved by your board in the financing plan. And alas, there are some ineligible costs that the state won't pay for. And so those are also funded by public facility fees. Your board has already approved the financing plan. Before you today is a slight revision in the project plan to fully fund this architectural agreement, including the programming. The total has not changed. The cost will not change. Overall, it's a shift within the project budget of $158,000. In terms of schedule, look ahead has taken a whole new meeting. Here we are in the fall of 2014. We expect to bring you back in the fall of 2015 all the operational statement staffing plans and concept drawings to send them to the state so we can go build this one. We would look to the spring of 16 for conditional award of a construction contract and to complete it in the spring of 2018, just a little bit following our AB 900 Phase 2 project. That will be a great day if you decide to proceed with this project. Staffing is critical to your board's thinking and planning and concern about this project. This project replaces the downtown jail, a long-standing goal of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors for over 25 years now, with the exception of court holding. As you know, the state is planning to build a courthouse in downtown Modesto. Ultimately, we hope that that will eliminate the downtown jail altogether. The plan is simple and it is direct. We will transfer all of the sheriff's staff from the downtown jail and the jail alternative staff to staff the REACT Center. Still, it is ultimately the Board of Supervisors' decision about when and how to staff these facilities. Keeping in mind, along with our AB 900 Phase 2 project, which are additional facilities, and our SB 1022 project, which is essentially replacement facilities of an old linear downtown jail, they are being built for the decades to come. And the Board of Supervisors holds the control over how and when they'll be staffed and operated. And a phased opening is allowable under the conditions that we've agreed upon to accept the SB 1022 project. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we have 5 recommendations before you today. We will be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions to staff? Supervisor O'Brien.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for all the information in the staff report regarding the selection process. Do you have one more, I need more information and clarification on recommendation number 4, the $158,000.
Yes.
I've read the staff report, but I need to understand, we come in over budget on the architecture monies. Is that what's happening here?
Not exactly. Let me explain. When we began our quest for 1022 funds, the state requires us to look ahead. Even though you cannot spend you cannot spend a penny on design, and you can't hire an architect until the State Public Works Board says go. So we estimated the cost of what it would take to design this facility. We are also asking this design team, we asked all the design teams to give us a proposal for the programming of this facility, which is the uniqueness about this different kind of detention facility. And so we didn't estimate it correctly to begin with. This cost, we've vetted this cost, we've negotiated the recommended cost each day. We think it is fair. We don't think it's exorbitant. It's not over budget, but when you start this project, and I should have brought for you, there's something I call the blackout sheet. You have to pick the cost for construction even though you haven't designed it. You have to pick the cost for architecture, even though you can't hire an architect and see their fee. You have to pick the cost for inspection services, even though you haven't secured those services. So the transfer before you today will fully fund this contract within the total, and it'll come out of the funds that we originally anticipated for furnishings, and we think we'll be good overall. But the state requires us to make this change. On our 8900 project, we have changed that budget summary that requires the state approval 4 times so far.
So in our original documents on 1022, we had $2,042,000 as architecture money?
Yes. Okay. I think that might is the exact number. It's exactly $158,000 difference, and this is what the blackout sheet looks like.
Okay. And then, I mean, obviously we haven't got to the point of bidding this project yet, but if, I mean, we're $158,000 short in construction side of it, will we have alternatives to reduce the cost?
We are transferring from the category for furnishings. We're quite confident. Now, we made these estimates, Supervisor O'Brien, when we submitted our SB 1022 project a year and a half ago. We have learned so much on our 8900 project about what our furnishing obligations are. We're very confident that the money's there. And I don't want to leave you with the impression that we guessed. We hired independent estimators to build essentially the model for SB 1022 to its construction core in detail before we ever asked your board to submit the application. We can't go back. We are one of the few counties that has never asked for more state money, and we will never ask for more state money, and we won't come back to your board and ask for more money. We will make it work out. That's been our tradition. That's our plan. And we're very confident in the numbers before you today.
Very good. Thank you.
Any questions on staff? Supervisor Withrow.
Patty, or maybe Bill even, explain to me how the old jail is going to work here. We talk about 200 inmates a day coming and going. Does that mean it's empty at night and this is just
during
the day?
Basically during the day we will have staff there that will stage the inmates on the transportation vehicles. They'll move them to the jail. They'll be housed in the jail until they move through the tunnel over to the court. Mm-hmm. And basically it'll be a daily operation Monday through Friday. We're moving about just shy of 200 inmates a day to court. And so in the interim, while the existing courthouse exists, we will house them we'll use that facility as a court holding facility. When the new courthouse opens up, it's going to be transportation as usual.
Right. So then we'll be done totally at that point. Once the new courthouse is built, there'll be no need at all for that jail facility anymore. And then we'll figure out what to do with that. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. I guess cost wise, just to keep that open, I know we're going to move everybody out of there and just be doing that, but the cost-wise to keep that facility going while we're waiting for the new courthouse to happen, I guess have we...
We've spent a fair amount of time talking about that, and there's a lot involved in the transportation plan and what will be included in the new courthouse in terms of court holding, and so we're looking forward to seeing those plans. We know this, that we'll have the transportation costs, which are significant. We know this, that we'll have dual utility costs while both facilities are open, but we also know this, that the flexibility that this will give the sheriff to live within the budget that the board approves, it may mean that the 1022 facilities are not fully operational. It may mean that something else happens on court security. But what's most important is we have flexibility, and your board has flexibility. Unlike our SB 81 contract with the state, which was the first generation of lease revenue bonds, boards of supervisors, including yours, I guess about 5 or 6 years ago, essentially had to sign your life away and say the day it opened, you would fully operate it no matter what your fiscal condition was, no matter what the economy said, you had a guaranteed obligation to operate it. That doesn't exist here. The state is finally taking a longer view that the counties are building these facilities in response to realignment, and they're building them for decades to come, not for day one.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Other comments from the board? I just want to make this one comment that no decision has been made yet to completely close the downtown jail, although this would allow us that opportunity, but that building may be needed for a while. It doesn't fit, you know, what we're trying to do today with the inmates, but it's the building, I went through it a couple of months ago with our CEO, and it's actually in pretty
sound condition. Let's say complete closure of that except for the detention facility, really. That decision hasn't been made yet. I just want to make that clear.
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments? Any member of the public who wish to comment on this item? Nope. State your name for the record.
My name is Deborah Harper, and I'm continuing to try to coordinate in Modesto, California. I graduated from Oakdale High in 1976. I'm not a stranger to this area. So I'm going to speak respectfully again. Okay. We're talking about buildings, and this is a priceless project. And it's exciting to hear you talk about it. It's progressive. It's on the mark for now and in the future. The gentleman that spoke to you, I can't remember his name, with HOK, respectfully, talked about rehabilitation. I'm not quite clear as to how a building is going to be rehabilitative. The design can be set up for the people that come into the building to do the rehabilitation. And respectfully, there's a list of unresolved personal issues I've been trying to clear my name on for a gazillion years, and I can't get my day in court. Instead, I have the false mental labels and nothing to back up one single mental label to jam me up in this county. So this building is priceless. It's progressive. I'm just praying again that the county, the sheriff's department, including the two deputies that were called on me at the library after I was being insulted and manipulated, if we can work on those issues. The other thing is not just not being able to clear people, not just getting a day in court. I watched in an opportunity of being banished to shelters. I watched a police officer tase a mentally ill woman. She was mentally ill. She did not comprehend the process that she was in, and an officer tased her. Okay, these are all very prominent in our community, and it's been for years. Okay, this upgrade, when I spoke of upgrades earlier, I wasn't talking about the buildings, but this is just an amazing and exciting project. I'm asking you to look at the people aspect, the standard protocol. The devil is not in the standard protocol that you have walking into this building every day. Okay? The devil exists, but he's not in the standard protocol that you set and enforce and don't enforce and manipulate throughout the county respectfully. These people you're very good at what you do. These people appear to be very good at what they do, but it's not just about the building. Okay, if we can get this building going and upgrade everything around it, then we're on the mark completely. And every ounce of money that goes into this building and every project that you do around it is worth every penny. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this item? Any further comments from the board? Here are five staff recommendations. I remind the board that this takes a 4/5 vote to pass.
Remove the five recommendations.
Is there a second?
I will second it.
Okay, motion's made and seconded. We approve the five staff recommendations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried 4-0.
Thank you very much.
And we will now move to agenda item B9. Morning, Marianne.
Good morning. I'm Marianne Lee with the Health Services Agency. With me at the staff table is Carol Dunbar, our Chief Financial Officer for the agency. We're here to talk with you about intergovernmental transfers, or IGTs. We want to give you an update on what occurred last year and then ask for permission to essentially do it again and if it's available, to do it in future years as well. what we're going to do this morning is I'm just going to give a brief overview, and then I'm going to turn it to Carol Dunbar to go through the detail. And that's really appropriate because I'd have to say before last year, either Carol and I had experience with IGTs, but we kind of dove in, and Carol has really taken the lead, put an awful lot of work into this initiative for us, working with a consultant that had the experience with health plans and the state. So, and then I'll wrap up with the recommendations. So, just kind of an overview. And the first thing, so much of what we talk about lately has to do with health reform, related to in some way. This is not related to health reform. The IGTs predate the health reform. So, this is a complex process of obtaining matching federal funds that's related to the Medi-Cal program. It's a way for us to leverage county health care costs, what we're incurring, the funding that we're using to pay for the for services for Medi-Cal, and a way of obtaining federal funds to help support that. It involves the Medi-Cal managed care health plans, and it involves the State Department of Health Care Services. And it's important to us. It helps to offset uncompensated costs to help balance our agency budget. So the first time that we pursued this was last fiscal year, so fiscal year 2013-14. Obtaining available matching funds from the rate year of 2011-12. That's a Medi-Cal rate year that Carol will talk more about. We took this initiative and opportunity to the Health Executive Committee last summer, where we received support and then received approval from your board to go forward. Last year, the resulting value for last fiscal year was approximately $1.2 million in that federal revenue that came in, and that was only with one of two health plans involved for that rate year. Okay, so at this point, Carol's going to dive into the detail for you.
Okay, for the current rate year, 12-13, which is a federal fiscal year, so it would be run October 1st through September 30th, we have two plans that are going to participate. We'll have the Local Initiative Health Plan as well as the Commercial Medi-Cal Managed Care Plan. Health Plan of San Joaquin was in our county as a local initiative beginning in January of 2013, running through September of 2013 for this rate year, and Health Net was in our county the entire year. Last year when we had reached out for the rate year 11-12, we had asked Blue Cross if they would consider participating or working with our county for an IGT, and I think because of them losing the local initiative contract, they declined. So this year we are, it's very beneficial. We do have two plans that are going to participate. Next, I wanted to give you a couple of definitions. First was a rate year, which is federal fiscal year, as well as what an intergovernmental transfer really is. It's just the exchange of public funds between different levels of government. And I guess the state's been using this, and especially in the Medicaid program, for a long time. They've been working with the public hospitals on Medicaid IGTs since the inception of the Medicaid program, which is back, I believe, in like the 1960s. This is also not an uncommon feature for education as well as some of our social service programs, where the state's allowed to use some of our county funding to obtain federal match funds, thereby increasing available funding to the program. IGTs are not only allowed by state regulations, but also in the Medicaid statutes as well as the Code of Federal Regulations. The background, there's been several non-hospital counties participating in these IGTs for several years now. They have been in existence, as I shared, with public hospital counties for numerous years. And the IGT really consists of the county funds going up to the state, DHCS using those funds to match federal dollars, and then the dollars will be given back to the county via the health plans. The eligible entities that are allowed to participate in IGTs, first of all, you have to be an active Medi-Cal managed care plan. So if, let's say, health services was no longer active and a provider and didn't have a contract with the managed care Medi-Cal plans, we could not participate. The other requirement is you have to be an eligible entity, which consists of counties, healthcare districts, and other political subdivisions of the state. An example would be like UC Davis, their standalone clinics that they have. Next, this is a very complicated piece, is the calculations that the state make to determine the actual IGT available to eligible entities. They work with CMS annually on the eligible rates or allowed rates to be paid to the managed care plans for their enrollees in their programs. They base the calculations on an upper and lower limit. Then what happens at the end of the rate year, they look back to see what actually was used. So what the upper limit was versus what was used by the plans, payment to the plans, and that gap is called headroom. What can happen with that headroom is then they can take that, and 50% of it could be county funds to match 50% of that headroom in federal dollars. So currently for rate year 12-13, we asked for the maximum available for the health plan IGT, which is about $5.4 million. And HealthNet, we were allowed to participate at the same level that we participated last year, which was 60% of the maximum available. So that amount would be $6.2 million. However, it's important to note that these values include county funds that we'll send up to the state, and the money will come back through. The use of the funds must be used in support of the Medi-Cal managed care programs. It can't be used to return any funds to the state, to the local government, other than HSA, which is a Medi-Cal health care provider. We can't use the funds for buildings or administrative costs that we're already responsible for, but we can use it for services for Medi-Cal managed care individuals, as well as the uninsured or underinsured. And we can, if we don't use it at all in any one given fiscal year, we can let it hit our fund balance or retained earnings in the case of HSA and use it in the future for projects or services related to these program enrollees. The timing usually begins, I guess, in May, and they first work with the county public health hospitals, and then they work with the county organized health care systems, and then last are the two plan counties. They were a little bit late this year in contacting us, but that's primarily because there was a few changes to the IGT program and the information that needed to be submitted to the state. But usually it will happen May through June. Then what happens is we're required to submit a non-binding letter of interest just stating that we're interested in participating in this program. And then we work with the individual plan to determine what our portion will be. And that information is given to the state, and the state approves it. And then draft contracts are developed for the eligible entities. And then once those draft contracts have been approved, we're given a deadline for submittal to the state. Okay, and then once the state receives the approved contracts, they do share with CMS to ensure that the contracts meet what CMS intends the funding to be. And the entities, once those have been approved by CMS, we send the funding up to DCHS. That usually will happen prior to the end of September, but it looks like it's going to be later than that because the process got started later. DHCSN takes the money, matches it with federal dollars, and then sends the money to the plans. And then the plans send the money, including our contribution, back to us, and less the administrative fee. So this usually, the entire process is usually finalized by December 31st. Here's the calculations at a glance. This is based on the estimates of the eligible the available headroom, as well as what it looks like. So the two county plans, there's available headroom of about $12 million. There'd be a match of federal funding once we send our money up of $6 million. Federal funds would match at $6 million. We do have to pay DHCS an administrative fee at 2% based on the available headroom, and then DHCS pays the health plans, and the health plans then pay us. So the dollars that will come to us are $11.6 million, and only $5.6 million of that is really related to federal funds. So our net federal funds, net of the DHCS fee of 2%, is about $4.4 million estimated for this current fiscal year. And I'll turn it over to Mary Ann for the recommendations.
So the bottom line is we send up six, we get an extra 4.4 back.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I'm just going to move through the recommendations, and I won't read them. The length of each one, but essentially we're asking for permission to pursue the IGT transfer with the state. We're asking for permission to send that money up to be matched, asking for permission to pay the state their admin fee, approval to execute the amendment to each of the health plan agreements that we have, the one with HealthNet and the one with Health Plan of San Joaquin, to accommodate this, and then additionally, if IGT arrangements like this are available in the future, the approval to move forward and pursue those in future fiscal years as well. With that, I'll stop, and we can try to answer any questions you have.
Any questions of staff?
Yeah, just wanted to, it's a very complex issue. Health execs spent probably an hour and a half drilling down this last year, completely understand it, and it's not real easy to understand it. On the face, there appears that there's risk, but there really isn't. So it's just a funding mechanism is really what it comes out to.
It's certainly an odd way that works. We have to send money up and then get it back. It just, only government works like that. Supervisor Withrow.
It is very odd. But, yeah, like you said, that's government. One thing, Marianne, prior years, this is something that could we have been doing this for years, or this is just something that is recent? I don't know.
Well, we probably could have been doing it in prior years, but when we first learned about it, they had been going on in other counties, like Carol said, with public hospitals. The arrangements were a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some federal scrutiny about the IGT. So when we started looking at this in 2011, I believe, mm-hmm. but we were a little concerned because of what the feds were doing looking at the process.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to get involved in something that might be risky with
right.
a lot of money. And so we kind of backed off until that seemed to shake out and it looked like it was good to move forward.
Perfect. Okay.
Any other questions of staff? Okay. Any comments from the public on this? No. State your name for the record.
My name is Deborah Harper. I'm also, again, not a stranger to this county. Again, we're talking about funds. I was a Medi-Cal patient when I started when I started my physical symptoms in this county. Okay, this budget for Medi-Cal is priceless because there are people that are kicked down in addition to being broke. There are people that are kicked down that have to go through this Medi-Cal system. It's priceless. But again, once again, I request. I went through from top to bottom seeking physical health care. I went through the chain of command. And I ended up at the board meeting, again, at that moment, on Medi-Cal, as a patient looking for physical health care. Everybody was distracted with personal venues. Everybody was distracted with ambiguous language, which is another thing that I would request we be removed, that we can remove the ambiguity in our health care, including the patients on Medi-Cal, and in our system, our court system, respectfully. I was told by a board member who's no longer here. I cannot remember his name. His secretary was Cop. Sandra Cutt?
Sandy, how'd that be Jeff Grover?
Thank you. Respectfully, he's a priceless human being, and so is she. Respectfully, she's gone now. She told me after I tried to get the appropriate physical health care, that Stanislaus County was not required to provide health care. I was kicked out of Stanislaus County Health Services Agency. And in the process of looking for further health, physical health care, my last physician, my last internal medicine physician coded me the mental diagnosis of psychosis, respectfully, for a year. And he didn't even discuss with me that I had psychosis. So I was booed out of Stanislaus County after being on Medi-Cal, and I've had to scratch and gravel. So I pray that you, again, look into the people portion of the budget. Okay, you're moving a lot of money in this county, and it's very important and respectful. If we can improve what's going on with the people portion, I mean, I've never heard anybody get kicked out of any health care, physical health care, any health care, except for in this county, respectfully. So if we can look at the people portion of every aspect of any budget, it would make every penny worth going into the budget that you're putting into there. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Okay, I'm going to bring this back to the board for action. They have 6 staff recommendations. Is there a motion from the board?
I will make a motion to approve all 6 staff recommendations.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried.
Thank you.
Thank you for your report. We will now move to correspondence.
This board has received a notice from the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District regarding a public hearing on September 18, 2014, to consider the adoption of a supplemental document to address Clean Air Act requirements.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a letter from Ball Corporation regarding the layoff of 159 employees at their Ball Metal Food and Household Product Packaging Division Americas at 300 West Gregor Street in Oakdale, California, beginning on October 24, 2014, per the Warren Act.
Refer to the Alliance WorkNet and the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a copy of the El Soyo Water District audit report for years ended December 31st, 2013 and 2012.
Approve the auditor controller.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Before I get to the board report, I have one request to speak under public comment. Public comment ended just after 9 o'clock. However, I could let me ask County Council if we can still allow this.
It's the board's discretion.
Okay, this time I'll go ahead and allow it, but if you should come in the future, public comment period is listed on the agenda as the very first thing we do, or next to the first. Go ahead, Mr. Bruce Hammerstrom.
Yes, I called Mr. Doring this morning, and before I could get to when the comment was, he hung up on me several times, so I apologize for being late, and I thank you very much for letting me have a comment with you. I don't know which one of you guys were here in 2007, but I filed a claim under the tax code for a refund, and it was mishandled intentionally by the county council at the time, Michael Kosnick. You guys did it as a, well, not you guys, but the board handled it as a tort claim, a general tort claim, and the tax refund has never been taken care of. I filed another claim on May 27th, and I was told by people in federal law enforcement that I should try to see what would happen if I filed another claim, to see if it was mishandled again, to see if I was going to be arrested for trespassing in a public building like I was last time. And lo and behold, it's been mishandled again. You guys know, being supervisors, you have jobs to do when you're elected. You're elected officials, and it's your job to do. It's not Mr. Doring's. I didn't elect Mr. Doring, and I don't think anybody here did either. The auditor has a job to do, and the request that I filed with her was intentionally mishandled and obstructed and interfered with by Mr. Doring here, because he just doesn't want to allow me a chance to address my concerns and do a claim. So that I filed the tax refund claim on May 27th. I've been getting letters from Mr. Doring saying that I'm intimidating people, I'm bullying people, I'm bullying staff, I'm a terrible person. I can tell you I'm not. I'm a perfectly rational person, I'm intelligent, I try to act professional as much as I can, and I've never done anything to warrant being defamed by Mr. Doring in his letters. It's basically setting me up to where later on somebody could do something to me and justify it because, oh, well, Mr. Doring said you did this, you know, so he's just a bad person. I'm not a bad person. Well, this claim is being mishandled again because the request isn't being allowed to be addressed by the county auditor like it's her duty to do. The claim, it's being mishandled too. I'm getting letters from Mr. Doring saying, threatening letters, saying, oh, it's over. It's in court. Go away. You're bothering me. Go away. I don't want you talking to the supervisors. I don't want you talking to staff. I don't want you around. I would feel much better if you just dropped dead and left somehow. This claim, you have 6 months. The Board of Supervisors, you guys have 6 months to act on this claim. It's for penalty cancellation. It's a totally legitimate claim. It's right word for word out of the tax code. There is no procedure. I've researched this through the law library and all the cases in the state. There's no procedure for doing these penalty cancellations. Okay? So here, I'm establishing it. And I'm not going to be interfered with and obstructed by Mr. Doring here. The auditor is required to investigate my claim. The staff is supposed to rule on it. And then if I don't agree with that, then I can appeal it to her personally, and then if she still doesn't do it, then I file the claim with you. I had to file the claim because I get this letter from county council saying, oh, well, your claim's denied. You know, well, you don't have any jurisdiction, you don't have any authority, you don't have any power in this. But, you know, you do something, what if later on somebody says, well, you got this letter and you had so much time to file your claim and you didn't. So I don't want to have to file a claim. I want to do that, but I have. So you have 6 months, to do this claim and pass on it and do whatever you have to do. Now, the original claim that I filed at the State Court of Appeal, 5th Appellate District in Fresno, is my time up?
Time's up. You have about 5 minutes.
Back next week.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hammerstrom. If you do come back, please come into the public comment period. Mr. Doring, do you have anything to say about this?
I would like to make a comment for the benefit of the public who might be listening. Mr. Hammerstrom claims that we should allow him a chance to address his claim, and I would point out that we haven't done that. In fact, Mr. Hammerstrom has literally had his day in court in this exact same circumstances, factual patterns, and the amounts in question have been litigated in the local courts here. It's now up on appeal, but nonetheless, he has had his claim, his day in court. This claim, as he's pointed out, is at least 7 years old on for taxes levied, as he mentioned, back in 2007. This matter has been resolved by the courts. If there's no further action is required or necessary by the county on this matter, and his remedy, if at any at all, is to seek redress in the courts like he has in the past.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Doring.
May I say something to address that?
Your time is up. I'll direct the clerk to shut the microphone off. You can come back next week. Mr. Hammerson, I'd let you speak out of the agenda, so if you have something further, come back next week. Is there any Board of Supervisors reports? Seeing none, Legislative and Fiscal Management report, Mr. Risen.
Yeah, I'm pleased to announce that our Southwest County Employee Mentor Program is a recipient of one of this year's CSAC Challenge Awards. So, I encourage you to join me in congratulating Keith Boggs and Norma Baker, as well as all our dedicated employer mentors for this outstanding acknowledgement of the great work performed in this program. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Risen. We will now adjourn to closed session. Mr. Doring?
One moment. First, I want to announce that pursuant to Government Code Section 54953, Subdivision B, Supervisor Chiesa will be participating in the closed session portion of the meeting via teleconferencing from 2300 North Street Northwest, room 3180 in Washington, D.C. You notice an agenda has been posted at the teleconference location. That location is accessible to the public, and the public will be afforded an opportunity to comment at that location. Today's closed session is to have a conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The agency negotiators are Stan Risen, Nancy Bronstein, and Jody Hayes. The labor organizations are those listed on the agenda. We do not expect a report out on this matter, and it is appropriate to invite public comment on the closed session part of the agenda at this time.
Any public comment on this? Okay, seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session.
Yeah,